You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to a new edition of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with me, Alex Payne. Welcome to my janitor's cupboard here at the National Stadium in Bermuda. It's the only place we can find some peace and quiet. To have a bit of a chin wag with Husk, who's back. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I spent a delightful weekend at Tindall Towers. What an incredible setup. Very exciting. Got some special filming coming, but I can't reveal too much about it. But it was very good fun and very wholesome family activity. I'm very jealous of Tins' family life, especially his lovely kids and three dogs. One of them I wanted to take home, which was a bit awkward as I got caught bundling into the car, but I had to give it back.
More on that in a mo. And it's a very warm welcome to not only a Six Nations winner, but also someone, I don't think we've actually signed contracts yet, but we're very hopeful that we're going to have a fourth wheel to our current tricycle. Dr. Ellis Genge, how are you?
Merci for the introduction, Paino. That's what I got to call you,
aren't it? No, it's not. No, we haven't yet signed the contract, and any more of that, yeah. And the contract will be...
Legally, I got to call you Paino from now on.
Yes, and also...
It's not happening.
And we're adding another zero to your contract because of doing that, so welcome aboard even more.
Do we need to start this again? We're going to call you sir, and we'll have some respect in this place. Respect to you, respect to your teammates. Well done at the weekend. How the fun? Games?
Yeah. It was class. It's the first... I actually got my first Six Nations cap at the beginning of 2019. No, 2020. Obviously, with the lockdown and stuff, it got delayed. So that was the first time I've actually participated in Six Nations. Other than that, it's all been autumn and summer tours and just the World Cup. So it was class experience for me on a personal note. But then obviously, when we won the championship, it was nuts. So one from one.
I didn't realise that Ellis, firstly, hadn't done that many Six Nations because he's been around the squad since 2016.
Olden tackle pads get absolutely smashed over the back of tackle sausages.
just absolute binge juice. For the English side. No, because we had Eddie Jones on, you know, he talked about taking you and Sinks to, you know, Australia and the fact that, you know, where you are now and he knew that you boys were just going to go around training, banging people, which is obviously, you know, great for an old bloke like me going, just see you two keynotes, like, vibrating, ready to smoke someone. But I think it's fantastic. Do you have subdued celebrations or do you always let pull the pin?
It was a bit weird, wasn't it? Obviously, because we couldn't... It wasn't weird that we couldn't go out. I'm sort of used to the fact that we're not allowed to go out and mix with people now. It was more so sort of sitting and waiting to see whether Ireland done the job or not, or if France scored 35 or 32 unanswered points. So it was a little bit stale for a bit, sort of on edge. But then as soon as the whistle went, yeah, we were buzzing.
How did the day actually pan out? Did you watch... I can't imagine you watched Wales-Scotland. You'll never get that back. How did the day work for you?
Have you been to that Roma Stadium, the one we played at?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, so like, you know, when you walk down, it's got the stairs, it got like a big screen. So I think during the warm-up, our warm-up, it was on there. So we sort of caught it as we walked out. Some boys watch it. I just went straight out. But we caught that. And then obviously when we were in the game, we knew that we needed to win by however many. So no, I don't think we were too focused on anything else except for just trying to put as many points on Italy as possible.
What about the day, the game? Is it quite irritating? Because a lot of, I mean, I'm watching it out here in Bermuda, I couldn't believe quite how, well, credit to Italy, they were up for it, but sort of at times, not necessarily within the boundaries of the gentleman's handshake.
It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? And they've obviously got a lot of non-Italian players who speak very good English, so they were dishing out all sorts of stinky crack. And
you have to name names in that capacity.
What did I think when we were like 34-7 up, Bram Steyn, the flanker, said something to Billy. He said something mental. I actually can't remember what he said, but it was like bizarre. And I looked over at him like, and then Bill said, mate, you're 30 points down. He was like, it's about the little victories, mate. And we were like, what?
Oh, you're picking at straws. You're picking at straws there.
That's what I said to him. After the game, I was like, fucking hell. Like, how can you even say that halfway through a test match when you're 30 points down?
That's like, the Italian, because the Italians always do a very good post-match spread. Cold meats, nice little wine selection, sometimes a brass band. It's a bit like going there, going, we're way better than the spirit of rugby after dinner with all the nauseas. You're like, do you know what? You can have that. If that's what you're basing your whole performance thing on, the post-match, brilliant. Little victories and all that, you know what I mean?
Carry on, like, I'd rather have a steak and kidney.
Yeah, that's so you, true. That's you through and through. You'd rather have a Ginster slice, mushroom chicken slice.
They're unreal, and you know they are as well.
Doz is into them. Doz can map every Ginster stop on the M40, yeah. M1, and you know, M25.
They're unreal, boy. Like, literally class. The steak bakes and that are unreal.
That's why you're in the front row.
Yeah, you're right.
High performance chat. Did you have a proper spread to watch the France-Ireland game? How did you watch that one?
Yeah, there was no post-match like with the Italian boys, which I know quite a few of them. So it would have been good to catch up. But obviously with the restrictions, we went straight back to the hotel. We had like a load of grub put out for us. It was decent, a few wines and that. And then when we won, that was it. Wheels came off then. Yeah, I went too loose, obviously, because we were on the terrace, like at our hotel, and we shed a few beers, etc. Don't know how much I can reveal, to be honest. I don't know what goes down badly.
Everything goes badly down in the world now. Eddie Jones says rugby's the laughing stock of the world, so we better keep a lid on it. I wanted to know, when I got my first cap many moons ago, you had to have a drink with every player in the squad. And when Stuart Lancaster came in, they removed that because it wasn't seen as something that you should do as a rugby player. And then obviously Johnny May on his cap broke a toilet into smithereens. What? And was that, I don't know how not because he dropped a bomb, but because I don't know what he was doing on it. I think the chicken inning came out, and then there was a big steward's inquiry, so that was stopped. But
well,
then I wondered now.
Broke a loo off the back of his debut.
I think someone trapped him in the toilet, and you know what Johnny's like? I think someone probably took his orthotics away, took his shoes away, locked him in a cubicle, and he went mad. I wasn't there. I can't blame me because I wasn't there. And basically, I know they were sort of taking a dim view on that. Was someone like Johnny Hill made to drink with the lads in the
room? Yeah. That tradition got reinvigorated this weekend, which you'll be pleased to hear.
Excellent.
He was at the back sort of trying to shirk a few drinks, and then in good spirit, we got him to the front. He actually had a mental song in the tank, which was good to hear. Ollie Lawrence, a pretty poor singer, but it was good to have the young buck up on stage. Ollie Thorley was on good form, as you can imagine. What a boy. But yeah, I was actually shocked how good the standard was for the songs. Because, as you know, my song was absolute shit.
What did you go with?
I'm pretty sure I started with Blackbird, and Hash was like,
oh yeah,
impersonating me again. Ear bab, no one understands you. So I cut that one short, and I think I tried a rap, and he was like, all right, Genji, sit the fuck down. I was like, oh, brilliant, blew it.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. That's the whole point.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Because you know what happened was that when what I'll explain to the viewers. So obviously, when the drinking sort of tradition, and again, throughout the whole tournament, guys would be very controlled. You may have a couple of drinks after a game, but because the nature of professional rugby, the demands, especially with the England, you wouldn't go mad. But at the end of a tournament, a responsible kind of team social is there. But whatever happens, you'd have to sing. And normally new players, new members of staff, and it's a great opportunity for someone gobby like me, gets to the front of the bus, demands people to get up. And there are some incredible people. Like, for example, when Dan Cole got his 50th cap at the Spirit of Rugby, just brought the house down with, I can't remember what it was, but it was like, I think it might be Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm not sure, but there was like,
wow,
there was like different voices, key changes, like just a general level of excitement. But then
7 minutes 42 as well. I mean, that's a hell of a
good
back yourself if you're going for
great
the full
knowledge.
Version.
Great knowledge. But it was interesting with a lot of guys that when they used to look at dignitary, so what happened was that sometimes you go back from a tournament and you might have like the president and some Alakadoos in the mix. And obviously, as soon as you get a young player up, so I've got, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Bristol, you've got Ellis Gedge, right? And Ellis walks up, all right, Babber, everything okay? Right, and starts doing his song. Everyone's like, shut up, fucking sit down, Ellis, get off, right? Or as soon as you start singing, and all you can see all these Alakadoos, people are like, oh my God.
Can't believe their eyes are like, yeah.
Cannot believe that we're like that rude to each other. But every now and then, what happens is you'll get the first 30 seconds of like systematic abuse. And then if you ride through that with an unbelievable voice, people have got phone lights out, people are lighting candles.
Tears.
Tears. There's been some tears. I remember when someone sung Iris from the Goo Goo Dolls, and people were like, "Ah, my real mosh, mate." It's nice. What do the boys go for? What do the boys go
for? Yeah, that's what I want to know. What's the range?
I'll be honest with you, I'm not really into your generic songs. I'm quite selective with my music. So the ones that everyone sort of remembers to sing, I don't know the names of, but I'll try to remember a few of the words. One of them was
Soft rock? Are we looking at a little love ballad?
Yeah, it's like that. So like a popular one that you're not allowed to sing is Wonderwall by The Kooks. No, by Oasis. So that's what everyone sort of goes for. But some of the boys had mental one. Johnny had one. What was Johnny's? It was an Irish song or something. Everyone joined in. I didn't know the words, but I was
that the Fields of Athenry? Was it that one?
Nah.
Wild Rover?
Yeah, that one. That
Play
one.
Play the Wild Rover?
Yeah.
For many a year.
Yeah, that. That was sick. And he knew every word as well. Yeah, and I've known Johnny since I was 16. I didn't even know he knew that song, so... Fair play. Amazing. I've never heard him sing.
Did any of them get more nervous for the song than for the
100%,
game?
100%. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. It's just the way it is, though, isn't it? Like, it's weird because some of the loudest people in the squad, even though those boys aren't particularly loud, Johnny and Ollie, like, the most confident people in the squad, you ask them to stand up in front of some of the boys and sing, or if you can't sing, show us your ring, like, get their ass out or something. Like, they just don't want to do it. It's mad, isn't it? You think, like, you play in front of 80,000 people in a test match, but you're shitting yourself to stand up and sing in front of the boys for 2 minutes. And it's not even 2 minutes because they start booing you off after 20 seconds. So,
Johnny May memorized the alphabet rap, you know, that by Blackalicious, I think it is, you know, or it was Johnny May, wasn't it?
Johnny's song when he came to Leicester, which I can only assume he did his England debut, was Ice Ice Baby. And he does the backing song as well. So he's like, boom, dum, dum. There's a sick beatbox. He's like, Ice, Ice. But as he's beatboxing, he's singing at the same time. Like, he's actually unbelievable at it. You know, Johnny's
Johnny's like, if you imagine a character like Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
Like, Johnny would go off into a room with a rap record, not come out for 6 days, just come out like covered in water, like going, stretching and get a beer back and come back and deliver the greatest rap you've ever heard. But he definitely did. He's done Ice Ice Baby, but he also does the, I don't know what it's called, it's like the alphabet rap, but it goes from A to Z and everything in between. And so fast that lyrically you're like, I mean, I talk quickly, but I couldn't do it. It's incredible.
No, yeah, he's one of a kind, isn't he? And he sometimes delivers those golden eggs, quite literally. So,
talking of the golden eggs, any nice moments for Ben and Jamie at the end of it all?
Yeah, they... Haas, you got... How many did you get? 70-odd?
77, yeah.
Yeah, so Jamie got that 50, the silver 50 cap, which is sick. And then I haven't seen it before because obviously only Jason Leonard had it, but Len got the golden version of that, which apparently they're like a load of dough to make. So he's looking into pawning it. Lenny got a watch as well, one of the Bremont watches, which I think is one of the sponsors for England or Curry based. This is actually a bit mad, like Curry's sponsored by Bremont Watches, isn't he? And he didn't like sort the watch out. It's fucking like, it's one of his main sponsors and he didn't like sort Lenny with a watch. We had to do it ourselves. But I think Faz sorted that watch for Len. It had like engraved 100 caps on the back. It's pretty sick. And then the other big one, my 19th one, 16th off the bench, I got a packet of strawberry laces. So
pawning those?
Yeah, of course. They're dusted, Bab. They were dusting the warm-up.
They were gone straight away. They were gone by the time you got it onto the field.
The strawberry fizzy laces. The sweet game was actually class. Obviously, with the restrictions, you know, you get that big box of sweets in the middle of the table and everyone's absolutely hammering them and all the worms and that are gone within 2 minutes. Because we couldn't touch them, everyone wasn't allowed to put their hand in the box. We had like little pots put by our seat and we had like the best sweet selection I've ever had. So that was one highlight.
Can I ask you something? Because I know like the greatest moment of your life is a free pot of sweets. That's kind of the level. I can imagine some dog food for you, another set of cool gaming headphones, some free stash and some sweets is like basically top of the list.
Yeah, so happy.
Just asking about those COVID restrictions, do you find it a little bit odd? I'm interested to see what players' opinion is, or do you just get on with it? So you spend all week training, you spend all week together in a hotel, and then when you get into changing room, they're like, space you out. They're like, you can't share all the food, yet you've played 80 minutes just with everybody there. And it's like, how do you deal with that?
It was a bit mad, yeah. Like, they told us to stand 2 metres apart during the anthem, and I've done a quick head count. It's 23 of us, so that's 46 metres. That's half the fucking pitch. Like, imagine the cameraman, how out of breath he'd be when he's coming up. Like, fucking, give him the fight, the truffle shuffle on the line, like... 46 metres. And that's just the space in between. Then add another 46 and you've got the Italy boys on the other side of the pitch. But yeah, we do think about, obviously you've got to try and forget about it. That's what Eddie said, just like try and forget about all the shit going on. I know it's hard, but focus on the game. But yeah, I do find it ironic how they make a stand apart for the anthem and then 2 minutes later someone sweats dripping in your mouth in a ruck. Like,
that's what I mean. That's what I can't understand. It's like, it's like, oh, by the way, make sure you don't miss out your tackle, don't miss your tackles, don't miss your clear outs. But for Christ's sake, lads, don't put your hand in the communal fizzy laces and worms because you might spread the virus.
I know exactly what you're saying, mate. But
is there any is there anyone in the team without naming them, necessarily a player or a management, who's like proper jobs worth? Because I ran into a petrol station. I ran into a petrol station today, and I couldn't find a mask, and I was so desperate for a piss. I've been in the car for 2 hours, and I just ran straight in, went to the bathroom. And as I came out, of all things, a community support officer came bowling in, and he was like, I can see, he just went, got out his very threatening notepad and was like, where's your mask? Yeah. I said, listen, I'm sorry, mate, I need to go for a wee. If you need me to buy one at the thing, but I'm just going to go out. It's like, yes, you need to buy one. I was like, yeah, but I was going to piss my pants. I didn't have one. I'm so sorry. And he's like, wear your mask. I was like, oh, my God. Calm down. I think there's also a cat stuck up with a tree, Chief, if they've got a really big job on.
Do you think he listened to last week's pod? He's been tracking you ever since.
Maybe.
Do you quickly want a quick interlude on that? Where did that end up, net out, ratio, good to bad?
Do you know what? I have not had one negative comment. I must have had 40 direct messages and emails saying, I heard what you said of Barbarians, finally someone talking sense, finally someone talking like that. Mrs. C. Madeley and Mrs. C. Haskell. I missed an A, Paino. I've had no problems about it. But, I thought we handled it relatively well. I thought, you guys countered my version. I think, obviously, a few people got in contact with Tins, because a lot of people, when they want to have a go at what I'm saying, they don't go to me. They go like...
I get that. Yeah. You want to tell Hask that, .. I'm like, tell him yourself.
Yeah, but no one does. That's the thing. It's like, everyone we get on this thing, like, we're going to sue you, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I'm like, why has no one picked up the phone and said, hello, James, by the way, because we had a guest on a while ago who got very upset about something, or someone talked about him and got very upset, and nobody tells me anything. Tim's got a message going, oh, I think Hask probably done a little bit too much. I'm like, why doesn't someone pick the phone up and tell me that I'm wrong? But the thing is, nobody has. And I think factually, I was pretty comfortable with certain aspects, but I never once said that they didn't make a mistake. All I said was, let's look at the details. And as Ellis has said, there is a possible potential that people might be just putting in some shit rules for the sake of it, not really knowing why they're doing it and what they're doing it for, but you all have to just get on with it. I know the rules are rules, but sometimes common sense is key.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
The other thing I was going to say is give him a chance to make it right. Chris Robshaw went down to East Grinstead and,
I think with the East Grinstead thing was really interesting, because obviously I didn't realise that a lot of that game was being played in memory of, I think it was the policeman.
Matt Ratana, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Ratana, who sadly died. And, it was kind of obviously a really disappointment that game wasn't able to be celebrated. And I think the fact that Chris went down there shows the character of the guy to go and address people. I did get a message before the Premiership final from some bloke going, Hask, it would be really nice now the Barbarians game is cancelled if you could get a minute's silence for the game for Matt. And I was like, mate, I think you've really misjudged my power levels. Like, how do you want me to, like... I said, I haven't got a red phone like they've got in, like, America, the Rush, where I can call up. Is that Prem Rugby, RFU? Yes, Hask again. Do us a favour, Chief. It wouldn't connect. It'd be like a phone with a cord going to nowhere. And so I had to write back and I said, listen, I really appreciate that, it's really important that we mark Matt's death and everything else. But mate, nobody listens to me. I do this podcast and nobody speaks to me. Nobody listens to anything I say other than this podcast. I have absolutely no power. So when people message me about, could you fix this? Could you sort this? You're better off just shouting it into the garden, because that's going to have more effect.
Hopefully it sorts itself out. I see they've all been charged by the RFU, so hopefully there'll be a way of squaring the circle somehow. Just quickly, I want to pick up on the end of last weekend. How was Eddie with it all? Was he happy leading the singing, or did he let you get on with it? Where was he at with the win?
No, he was all right, I guess. We obviously didn't put the best performance in that we've ever played. But, I mean, if you think about normal circumstances, you go away to Italy, they'd make it a shit fight in front of, like, an away crowd as well, the passionate Italian crowd, a lot of new caps in the squad, and we hadn't played together. There's loads of excuses you could throw into the pot, but albeit we didn't play our best game of rugby. I think if you think, like, in the circumstances, 34-7, it's not a bad score. Probably left a lot out there as well. But, yeah, he's happy. He wants a win, and we won the Six Nations, so I guess you can't be disappointed.
No. What was he like at half time? Is he quite calm?
Yeah, he was. He's good at, like, as Spectas has told you before, but he's good at sort of like playing on boys' heartstrings and like getting people emotionally prepped for a game, just the way he speaks. So he didn't need to lose the plot and put added pressure on, because boys knew what the stakes were. And obviously coming in 10-7 up isn't where you want to be at halftime. So yeah, he sort of just said, boys, go out there, do your job. Like, they're going to break eventually, stick to the role. We don't need heroes right now. And I guess the boys done that. And then we sort of brought he slowly rolled the bench on and game opened up and we scored the points in the end.
Tell me something I really want to ask. Sorry, I'm just going to dive in just off the back of that. So the inevitable sort of conclusion was that England were rusty because they hadn't played against the Barbarians. I'm just interested, from your perspective, why a game gets you to where you need to be rather than training? What is it about playing a test match that means the following week it's all... Do you know what I mean? Why does training not get you to that level?
Yeah, it's that unanswered question that if we knew the answer to, we'd probably be millionaires and not doing podcasts for 50 quid.
You're getting paid 50? Welcome. I'm only getting paid 20. Bloody hell.
50 quid a minute, Bab. I don't know the answer to that, but what I can tell you is that we've got data that shows us that we train harder than a test match. Like, the way we train is... It's berserk, like mad. That's all, like, the only way I can describe it. It's just, it pushes.
So then
you.
Why does that not translate into, you know, if you didn't give the performance you wanted to give?
I mean, it does. Of course it does, like, in terms of fitness, being physically prepped and equipped for the game. But you just can't emulate a game, can you? Like, there's just certain aspects of a game, whether it be like psychological duress or like the way you're feeling itself. You can't recreate that on a training pitch. We do our best. Like, we always do our best to put ourselves in those situations during training. And I think we do a really good job of it. And that's probably where the professional game's going now. I just spoke to Will Carlin about something the other day. He said, like, when that game first went professional, Hass, were you playing them or not? When it first went. in your cleats. So he told me that, like, as soon as it went professional, they were like, right, we've got to be in from 9 till 5. And they'd done the same shit every single day. And it was like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, we done this yesterday. And they were like, yeah, but you're professional now, so you've got to do this. This is the way we do it. But no one actually had a clue, did they? They'd never been professional before, so they didn't know how professional rugby players had to train. Whereas, like, now, everything's got a meaning for it. And, like, we literally train within game scenario and we hit our meters per minute of what we'd hit in the game, in training and beyond. So we've got all the data to sort of show us where we need to be to train and compete at that level. And we just try to recreate it as well as we can. Like, Hass, you've been involved in it. Some of the training is chaos. Like, it's so hard, but you get the benefits from it and you see that on the weekend. And sorry, to answer your question, I'm waffled on a bit there, but we physically equip ourselves so that we're ready fitness-wise, and then it's just down to decision-making, isn't it?
I think as well, for me, the reason, you know, it's so different with the game is that when you're playing against, you know, your own teammates and opposition, even though that you're bringing the fire and the intensity in the way, the only coach I ever worked with that did scenario training and mentally prepared you, you know, so many times games would happen and there'll be decisions like, why didn't you go for post? What, you know, the line-outs messed up 3 times. Why do you keep going back there? You know, what happens if the referee's, you know, blowing you up for no reason? And most teams sort of just gloss over it and say, oh, we'll do better next time. And you learn from that mistake. Eddie puts you in a situation through the week all the time where you face all of these things and get someone like, you know, get someone like Ellis, what happens, you know, if this is happening here? And even if it doesn't involve Ellis's role, he's expected to know or have an opinion. The reason games are so different for me is that it's the unknown of what the opposition and their general physicality, because, you know, hitting your own teammates is one thing, but there's always that unknown uncertainty with playing against opposition. Yeah. The fact that, you know, the emotions, the intensity, and when you're playing against a team that, you know, you can prepare the best way you want, but you don't know how they're going to do things on the day, how they react. You know, psychologically, they might be in a perfect space. They might have been absolutely optimal for that level of performance. Whereas you're playing against your own sort of teammates, some of the times, the reason why Team Binjuice always does so well is that they know the moves. Some of the time, they're like, if you're a call, most people would normally, like, you get the opposition, say, Italy didn't know this move. All the Italians will fold round the ruck. Binjuice, they'll go fold. They'll all stand this side. And the team will run into a brick wall. And, like, defence coach will be like, Matt, you fuck what? It's not your job to stay. And everyone goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Reset. Everyone folds. Everyone stays. Same again, yeah. You know, and it's like, it doesn't matter how much you prepare, the unknown of an opposition, the psychological situation, the added pressure, it makes all a difference. And I just think, you know, making a physical attack on someone that may or may not, you know, react in a certain way is one thing. You know, Ellis piling into me in training is one thing, but, you know, against an Italian prop or a stepping back or someone else, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you don't know whether he's going to be able to ride it. There's that unknown. And I think Eddie does the best job of trying to learn that. But you'll never recreate that intensity of a game or in, with the psychological and all the other aspects. That's why pre-season is almost a bit of a weird situation where you should be preparing the body and mind without breaking the lads and remembering that the first game of the season is going to, you'll still be blowing out your ass like you've never trained a day 100%. In your life.
100%. Like, you just, like I said, you just can't. I don't know what it is. It might be that you run around in Maldives in training and then you put the 21s on and you're fucking running tarmac straight away. But
also, I mean, you've got someone who wants to really get the upper hand on you. Like, you know, you might have a distaste for, you know, I won't mention his name, but there was always a winger that was in the squad. And as soon as he got the ball, you just hear five lads all over the film, hit him! And people would just be running out the lines to try to hit this guy. In a game, you do you know what I mean? You just don't know what's going to happen and whether they're more fired up than you are.
Yeah, and like traditionally as well.
I can't say. You would have known. Rhymes with Ryle and Rod.
Don't know.
Don't know, never met.
There's a 2 meter rule with him, wasn't there? Because his breath, so he was just social distancing for 5 years.
He was ahead of the corona loop.
Yeah. With this Italy as well, like traditionally they always like try to pull something out of the bag. So in training in the week, you never know what to prep for. Like when they've done that off, they've reinvented the ruck, then they've done the offside thing and stood in the way of DC's passes. Like that was fucking nuts. But that's why it's tough preparing against them, I guess, especially when you know you've got to score a fair few points against them. It's like, fuck me, they could literally start cartwheeling around the rucks and like know what to do. But
Did people find it quite irritating, the hooping and the hollering every time anything went their way?
I didn't actually hear all the hollering and that from the bench, but you could see it was sort of pissing the boys off when they... I'll tell you what I did here, actually. They like tackled someone, like one of our big ball carriers. It might have been Bill. I think they tackled Billy and they all started going nuts. And I was like, are you fucking... You're celebrating tackling someone.
Little victories.
Yeah, that's what I was just like. Well, I was blown away from the bench, and like obviously there's no one in the stadium as well, so you can imagine some of the language that was coming out of my mouth. I had to sort of button it a bit, but I was just blown away that people were celebrating such fucking. It was needless, wasn't it? And I don't know. There's people out there, purists of the game, that'd be like, "That's not the tradition of rugby." But fuck it, if it revs them up, it revs them up. Do you know what I mean? If their cocks are, then happy days.
But you can't go too hard when you've got Marrow, who celebrates
100% and
so much over everything that he might explode. He's like, woo! Yeah, you're like, Marrow, we've just won a penalty, bud. We haven't won the lottery, just relax. Yeah. But
do you, as teammates, ever say to Marrow, easy, easy? Or,
yeah,
or you've got to let him do it because it's what puts him on the edge?
Like, we do these sessions, like as teams, like psychology sessions, and we sort of try to find what gets everyone's dicks hard in games and stuff. So if that's what floats,
the bad in the rugby.
if do you know what I mean? If that pumps him up, if that's what revs him up, then that's him. And I think we're all very aware that Maz is into that. It's not for everyone, is it? I mean, I never seen Coley doing it, but new generation and that.
Can I ask you a quick question? Your role coming off the bench, particularly when it's a really bitty game like that, is it quite tricky to get into it, or actually are you just slot straight in?
I don't know. I think we prepare well, and you know your role in that team as like an impact off the bench, what you need to bring. I think in that game it was more so you just got to bring, weirdly me saying it, a bit more clarity, because at times you go off script, don't you, and boys start trying to win the game on their own. And the boss was clear of what he said to me. He said, just go on and do your thing, like just carry, get them over the gain line, scrum well, set piece. I think I did all right in that aspect, but then like everyone else needs to sort of link up with that as well. So when Yulzy comes on, you need clarity with the line out and things like that. So like I said, it's hard to play against Italy, especially when you're trying to chase points, because they could do something mad at any given time. And yeah, the whooping and hollering was fucking annoying as well. So.
Job done. I want to ask you one other question about Matt Proudfoot, who won the rugby championship last year, and then the Rugby World Cup, and now the Six Nations, which makes it quite a good year's work by anyone's standards.
Yeah.
How's he tracking with the England boys? How are you finding working with him, having obviously worked with the box at the Rugby World Cup?
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's very different to Hats. He's very different to everyone, actually, that I've ever worked with. He's
in what way?
It's hard to put your finger on it, I guess. You'd have to actually, to meet the bloke. He just does things differently. Like, I've never worked with anyone who does it the way he does it. He's a bit more, like, emotional as, like, a sort of as a scrum coach and, like, a forwards coach. You usually get a lot of detail around, like, the lineouts and stuff, which he's good at. But I think when you get to international standard as well, when you've got players like Yulzy, who just loves lineouts, and Maro, and, like, boys who actually love what they're doing, it's different when you're at the club, when you've got boys who actually don't actually want to do any graft. So you've got like boys who proper do all their homework and like bring him ideas. So all he needs to do is like get us right psychologically. So he's been good at that. But yeah, he's very different to most of the coaches that I work with. I mean, he's won a World Cup, so he can't be too bad, can he?
Do you think he's making you a better player? Do you think you're developing under him? Does he offer that, or is he like help? Because when I did some work with Michael Checker, he was brilliant, but one of the things he talked to me about was getting the emotional upper hand and physical upper hand against my opposition, you know, in terms of wanting to get under their skin. And it wasn't something that I'd ever thought about doing. You know, I was focused on my job, delivering my job. But then, you know, if I got into one-on-one battle, say someone like Dussatoir or one of these other guys, I was able to, you know, try to enforce myself. So if I hit him, try to get up, use him to get me out. Every time he's at a breakdown, I'm there clearing him out. Is that the sort of thing it was or not really with him?
What did you just say? you were sticking it on Dussatoir, were you?
No, I didn't say I stuck it on Dussatoir.
That's what you just said.
Yeah, no, listen, read What a Flanker Chief, all right? Get the audio book. Listen, get an audio book, because I know you can't read, but, you know, when you're just on spot, goes to search. There's a bit in there when I was talking about when I played against this SWAT, that was something that they told me. You know, he was one of the best flankers ever been. I didn't get anywhere near him, but just in one particular game, I got under his skin, and he went to launch an elbow that, really? Honest to God, would have pinged my head off its shoulders. It was amazing, but it was just interesting because I've never got that reaction from someone, which is ironic because most people don't want to elbow me in the head. It was just a point about having an emotional balance. I was never as good as him anywhere near. He was world class. I was fair to average. World class chat, nothing else.
You were a better social sec.
Great social secretary.
You're a much better social sec. I need to chat to you about that. Yeah, I do know what you mean, but I need to chat to you about your book. My old man's fucking ordered it, hasn't he? And it was on the counter when I got home. I was fuming, proper fuming. He doesn't read books.
Is he going to read it, or is he going to use it to light the fire? Or
yeah, I think it is. I think it is for the fire. But I just could not believe my eyes. I've come home, right, and your teeth are just sticking out of this page. Right,
he sent me a note.
I thought it was a pop up, but when I see the front of it, your teeth actually come off the front of the page.
Do you know what he said to me? He wrote to me going, "You're the son I wish I had." That's what you told me.
But anyway, fuck me, boy. Oi, you won't be going to fucking Eton if you have my old man, I promise you.
Yeah. It's all right. I'll be more down to earth, wouldn't I?
More rounded, yeah.
quick plug, how are the sales going this week, Ask?
Yeah, good. We've done over 70,000 copies, so I'm pretty happy.
And how many have you sold?
Well, 70,000 got pulped, a bit like Alan Partridge. Yes, right. Yes, good.
The last laugh.
Well, I want to know, Alice, genuinely, Alice, all that bullshit aside, I wasn't saying as good as just what. Is that the kind of emotional thing you're talking about or not?
Yeah, like he says to me, one of the things he says to me is, what do I need to do this week to get you right to play against, whether it be Italy or Georgia in a few weeks? And he says, what do I need to get you right to play against these boys? And sit down and make a little plan. I tell him what I need. I think he's quite a good understanding.
Does he order the girls in and the pies for you? Because I can imagine that's what needs to get you ready.
Social distancing. Now he's good at that, like sort of just, he's helping me, I guess, make a plan because he's quite self-aware in terms of, like, he's coaching some of the good players, you know. He probably isn't going to be able to get 100% growth in a player, so he's looking for, like, the 1%ers, which I'm finding quite helpful because I don't really think about him that much. But, yeah, he's very vocal, but more so off the pitch as opposed to on it, which, again, I appreciate.
Where are you at now? You at home? What's your sort of timeline this week?
I'm at my house now. I think we go back into camp on Friday, as long as you don't have COVID, obviously.
What are you going to do this week?
Fuck all. I've got a few bit of admin to sort out. Probably tidy the gaff a bit, cut the grass. When are we going to lockdown? Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday.
Fuck me, mad.
Are you any revolutions planned? We setting up any businesses? We taking over the world again? Nothing's happened for a period of time, so I wonder where you're at.
Nah, you're dead right. Nah, that was all. Like I said, that's all dust now. I've had a lot of people genuinely since I've since all that started, and I lit the fire. A lot of people sort of messaging me saying that they're working on their own shit with it. So I'm happy to hear that. And hopefully they can get off the ground and have more patience with the people than I did. But like I said to you, I think it's a long-lasting battle. We weren't ever actually going to be able to tear the gates down, go in and pillage the village. But at least it's started, and hopefully some good ground gets made with that. More so on the welfare side of things, I was attacking it because of the cuts and boys being on their ass, and just like some people were left in a right pickle, which I guess you're very aware of. But I'm just happy that people are actually caring a bit more about the welfare stuff now, as opposed to just disregarding it completely.
Did any of the players who originally didn't reply, you know, come back to you and sort of say they wanted to do stuff and then say why they never replied?
Yeah, so I'd actually, so many people when I heard about the cuts originally and sort of the clause in the contract that they can just manipulate it, I had a load of people saying that, well, they wouldn't do that. They would never do that. And then as soon as it became apparent, they all started crawling out from under the fucking woodwork and, Genji, please. But no, I didn't obviously drop the I told you so card, but it was good to see that they actually seen the light, as opposed to being quite ignorant and thinking, nah, it's not a problem at all. It's tough, isn't it? Because fuck me, there's so much shit going on outside of rugby, and I had so much abuse saying, you're fucking selfish, trying to look after people and your sport, but at the end of the day, you've got to look after what is in front of you, and that was what we were presented with at the time. So surely you're fucking bored of talking about that now.
Well, I, until there's a resolution, would you go again?
No, I would not. I would not be the leader of it, because I am fucking dreadful with admin, and just, I think I'm a bit too abrupt maybe in meetings when I'm speaking to some of these corporate boys about the intricacies of contracts and details and what people actually want. And I don't think it washes down as well as, for example, Greg Bateman. He was a lot better than I was in sort of articulating the conversation and how he wanted us to come across. But I'm happy to help people out, but no, I don't think people are willing enough for me to be at the front of something, because I call a spade, like if someone was fucking about, I'd lose my head a bit.
Did you get warned? Because, you know, reason I'm just going back over it is, since we spoke to you last time, this has all happened. You've been playing really well, you've got into the squad, and one of the things we talked about was the fact that if you didn't play well or you put your head too far above the parapet, that people would come for you. I want to know, did people come for you, and has that warned you off, or have you decided that your day as a revolutionary for the greater good is done, and you're just now head down, arse up? Like, I'm just interested in the mindset behind that.
Head down, arse up, as per, but I think more so, like, I had a babby come in, and when we weren't training, it was quite, not easy for me, but it was easier just to get all the meetings out of the way, and my day, I'd actually had a bit of time free, but now I'm changing shitty nappies and wiping his bollocks clean of all the shit. So, like, I haven't got that much time to sit on a Zoom call because I've got dirty nappies being thrown at the back of my head.
Is that Sinclair or your baby you're talking about?
Both at the same time. but, no, I do think it's just purely an emotional thing. Like, my missus said to me, like, you're a completely different bloke at the moment because of the way I was operating. It was just so much stress, mate, like, so much admin and so many arguments and debates, and it was like what we were saying was very, very clear and we had evidence for it, and it was just being shtummed, and I was like, you just can't do this. But yeah, apparently they can.
How is the Bambino? How are you finding all that? And the
It's good, mate. I'll be brutally honest with you. Everyone said, like, oh, it'll change your life and you'll feel completely different. Like, when he was born in that year, I, like, proper emotional, I was crying and all that shit. And then sort of 2 weeks in, I've realised he has no idea who I am, for starters, because they can hardly see fuck all. I'm here changing his nappies, and that's all he cares about is being fed and having his nappy changed. He doesn't want anything to do with me because I haven't got breasts and I can't feed him breast milk. So he does not care who I am. That was the first 2 weeks, and then we started getting smiles out of him last week, and I seen him smile for the first time in my own eyes today. So now I'm actually building a bit of a rapport with the boy, and I feel better about it. But before, Andrew's feel fucking useless. Like, and that's the brutal honest. Like, if people say that they've got this real good bond with their son or their kid at 3 weeks, like they're lying to your face.
Yeah, mine are 11 and 9, and they don't look at me much anymore either. So
I can imagine swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. Alex was going to do what his dad did to him just when he was born, sent him straight to boarding school, and they met on his 18th birthday in a very long room with like two wooden chairs. It was like mater, and they just shook hands really awkwardly, and that was approval.
Peter, mater is mother.
Yeah, Peter. Oh, sorry, Peter. Sorry.
If you're going to come at me, get it right in your Latin. Yeah, have you found it they're quite a nice distraction, or are you just charging on elsewhere? It's interesting because we spoke to Jack the other day, who said that he's basically locked himself in his gym for most of lockdown. I just wondered whether are you enjoying it all?
Yeah, Nosey loves slamming weights. I'm not big on the weight scene, so I can't do that.
I know,
myself.
We saw with your topless photos on Instagram with a cat, bud. Hey, one of them you were hiding sideways like this.
Yeah, the cat, yeah. Babs, the difference between me and you, though, is I'm happy. I am very happy.
my rig's in tatters now.
Have you melted, have you?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm happy, but not that happy.
You were clutching at straws. Like, I remember 2016 Australia tour. I thought, fuck me, this bloke was decent with his kit off. He took a stop off, six-pack abs, all that shit. Traps to fucking take down mutant rats. And then... You actually got in the gym and all you did was like flexibility with that fucking stick behind your head. So we went over his squats. So I was like, how is he in that shape? And he just stands up with a stick and prances around the gym. I couldn't believe my eyes. Like,
yeah, but that's what everyone always used to say to me. It was like, oh, you're a meathead. You can't do anything. Get out the gym. I was like, all I do is all my extra core skills like running, passing, tackling. I just do mobility in the gym. Everyone's like, I think when you kind of, if you eat really well, and you kind
of
just
diet is clean, like.
Yeah, are you just used to do one or two weight sessions, like a full body on one day and then a power, and that was it? That tired me in. Genetically, I was all right with that. Now I'm training the house down, just can't be bothered to track my food. So,
you've gone the other way.
I had a Chinese with tins, I was like that. What, you know, prawn toast, quarter duck, and chicken satay, just get it in you.
Perfect. Lovely.
That's too short. You've got to be happy. I want to ask you a couple of things, Ellis, and it sort of picks up from what you were doing with your players' epoch. Just a bit of the reaction to the weekend. And I'm really interested on a current player's view of it. So just picking through a few of the journos, Stephen Jones said it was a non-glorious tournament. Park pitch stuff in Llanelli, not a particularly super Saturday, said Rob Kitson in The Guardian. Paul Hayward in The Telegraph was going at the bonus points. The bit that was really interesting, Chris Foy, who said Saturday showed that rugby is bogged down by structure and its own super fit, super sized nature. Defensive line speed, caterpillar rucks, organised kick chase and mauls don't engage the wider public. Space is needed, make it 12 a side. Nothing more than fish and chip paper? Or as someone who is at the front line of it all, are you frustrated at times by the game you're playing?
Yeah, like I lost my head a bit after the game with some of the Italian boys, and if they do watch this, I'll take it back. But when they tapped and kicked it dead at 80 and didn't try to score another try, that proper fucked me off. Like, more so for the fact, like, you got people watching at home, you get to 80 minutes and they know game's done. But fuck me, try light it up again, do you know what I mean? You got nothing to lose. Just do something mental, like a no-look grab and kick and try and nutmeg someone. I don't know. Just do something as opposed to kick it out and, like, end the game. That was the only bit that sort of frustrated me. But I know what people are saying when they say caterpillar rucks and all that shit, but at the end of the day, I can guarantee you in 5 years' time, when someone talks about Exeter Chiefs doing the Barney Rubble, the double, no one's going to go, yeah, but they did caterpillar rucks and it was boring. All they care about is the dub, do you know what I mean? Like, they care about the silverware. So yeah, there's two ways to look at it. Happy days, Chris Foy, you can sit there and type that up, mate. But at the end of the day, boys putting their body on the line and they're getting wins. They don't really care, do they? I understand as well what he's saying about the sort of the game being a bit slower and not seeing as much like razzmatazz, but that's sevens, isn't it, Babs? Like, that's what sevens is for, the mental chucking it around and seeing all that crazy shit. I don't know. I'm in the front row with my head in the cave, so I'm probably not the right bloke to be asking. But I'm happy still. Whatever, mate, I'll adapt. Like, if the boys want to start doing that, I'm all in.
What's been fascinating being out here covering the Tens in Bermuda is just sort of getting a bit of exposure to that American market. It's NFL all over every channel you're watching, etc. And there's a lot of people comparing just the overall product, and that includes the on-field spectacle. Has you've spoken a lot in the past about how rugby is packaged up and presented, and the analysis game of it, etc. I mean, when you did you watch any of it this weekend or not?
Yeah, I watched. Yes, I watched Wales, Scotland. I watched England, Italy. I didn't see France, Wales, but I obviously followed bits of the score. Like, I thought the Wales Scotland game was, you know, I love both their sides, but it was just so dull and boring.
Which one was that?
That Wales, Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just boring. I thought the England game. Look, I think first things first, and I didn't say this earlier. Cast your minds back to the beginning of the Six Nations when France were the greatest thing that's ever lived. England should sack Eddie Jones, and this England team have lost their way, and there's long-suffering England fans, right? So let's fast forward to that part, to the point where we've just won the Six Nations. So all these people who say this one thing have now, are now still complaining, but England was done and dusted. Eddie Jones should have been fired. Let us not forget that. The second thing is that weeks ago, no one had heard of Ian Foster. Now he's the greatest All Blacks coach there's ever been, and it's the greatest team that's ever been again. And we go round in circles and again see what happens. I do agree that, and we've talked about it with fitness and the fact that now teams are so evenly matched. Everyone's got trainers. Everyone's, you know, as fit as each other. That the game has changed and there isn't space in the purest demanding space. You know, when you've got 14 men on their feet every single time, you're just not going to have that space. I think there is still some very exciting rugby that gets played in patches and moments. But when you're coming down to sort of winning at all costs, where one side know they're going to lose, and you're going in at half time, what was it, 10-5 or whatever, and the fact that, you know, people were going, oh, England have lost, England have blown it. You know, it's never going to happen that way. England were going to come out. Sometimes in these tough games, it takes a bit of time. But I think a variant of like a 13-man game, Eddie Jones talked about that. I think Tens is definitely exciting. But, you know, the world rugby people, they tinker with like bizarre rules that nobody cares about, which I'm sure they could alter something that might make a bit of a difference. Or let's test out a derivative of that. Because I think, you know, rugby does need to change what it does, because I think it's too complicated for people to understand. Because how can you not love a game? How can you not love a game where people are getting filled in? Yeah. There's like fast people, fat people, tall people, short people, right? There's like, you know, games never really finish 0-0, if ever. There's always some bit of excitement. There's a big hit, a big carry, some form of skill. Yet we're secondary to a game where you kick a round ball around that could finish 0-0. And people say it's the greatest thing ever. So there's got to be something we're not... And also, again, I know Ellis has said about the accessibility. I'm being a bit tongue-in-cheek about this. But I think there could be some exciting variations that we could explore. But I also think that, you know, when you're playing Six Nations rugby to win, unfortunately, this is the nature of it. You can't magic up unbelievable risk-taking rugby, because if you look at the Premiership final, Wasps versus Exeter, for example, Exeter did what they did very well, and it comes down to game of inches. And, you know, if you get two opportunities, you get two tries, then that's all you get. You can't manufacture champagne rugby unless you did do something drastic, like remove players from the field.
Fuck, it's when you say about that, and I know I've said it before, with the you can just screw up a piece of paper when you're in school and play football, can't you? Put down your jumpers and there's goalposts. But I know what you're saying with the rules, and there's so many layers to them, which I actually think makes rugby decent when you understand the rules. But me sitting there and trying to explain it to some of my friends, there's absolutely no chance. Like, it's impossible. And there's honestly times when there are professional players playing at top flight rugby in the Premiership who do not know the rules. What the fuck? Like, yeah, exactly. No, but genuine, like, it's like a ball gets kicked and it's still moving and you put your foot over the line and you touch the ball. That used to be a rule, now it's changed, but I bet half people don't even know that. And then when Lima Sopawaga against, it was in the Chiefs game, wasn't it? When he jumped back in with the ball and like the ball was out and then it jumped back in, one of the boys we were sat with in camp, so I don't think that should be a rule. But it's so much shit's changed with rugby, but it was already so complex that like no one can really keep up with it in the outside world. That's why I think like league's quite decent for like a outsider that's coming and watch, because it's just constant. Like, there's five six phases, bang, every single time, kick on the fifth usually. But like, did you watch that Melbourne Storm game?
I saw bits of it, yeah. I saw bits of it. I mean, I love the NRL and, you know, the Australian stuff over there, ARL. I absolutely love it. The way they play, the tries, the dynamism, you know, the fact that it's always some guy to the line, out the back door, they run out of players, someone cuts a bum, offload, score. I think it's fun, but you've got, it's a different kind of game, and the flowing nature of Union, you know, is exciting, but there is no space on the field, and there isn't going to be any more space on the field.
But yeah, you say that, and that's only because, like you said, defence is so good at the moment and everyone's shutting down space. But then, like, when someone cracks it, it sort of finds out how to get more time on the ball or make more space around breakdowns and things like that, then the game would be completely switched on his head again, and defences would have to go back to the drawing board. I think we're just in that transition period at the moment where rugby is so, the players are so elite and so good, and the coaching's like exponential, that you just can't manipulate a team like you used to be able to. And like you said, Babs, like, it used to be full of fucking fat blokes from the pub, didn't it? And you could run rings around them all day. Now there are literally elite athletes who play in the front row. But no, like, everyone's, like, literally, you can look at a front rower now and you think they can play on the fucking wing. Like, they're that quick and they're that mobile. Like, everyone's sort of on the same pecking order. Whereas back in the day when everyone's like, go back to the way they used to play when they're chucking offloads, because no wanted to run back and tackle him.
Yeah, but also, like, there was so much space. Everybody would fall over. Like,
the old fucking 45 drifting off the pass and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you've got like this. One, two, three people to fall over, and there'd be a herd of seven players, like under 15, under fives, running, and they'd score in the corner. They'd go, JPR Williams, the greatest that's ever been.
What a dummy.
What was the defence doing? And someone's tackling was like this. If you dive with, like, long hair, and you sort of look like you got near the bloke, you were doing a good job. I mean, I do agree with you, but I still think that, like, a variance of it, you know, and I also think the substitution stuff is interesting. I'm not doing you out of a job as the ultimate finisher, you know, but it is, you know, the fact that you have, you know, you can bring an entire new team on. I'd never thought about that before until someone flagged it, you know, an entire new team, where actually, you know, more people get tired, the lazier people get, you know, the meaning that space will appear. You may not get it for the first 40 minutes because everybody's fit, but you'll see as the game goes on, if you can't bring someone on unless they're actually injured, and we don't have that many subs, you may encourage you to play more. Body shapes may change, potentially be a little bit fitter. You can't have a derb if you've got to do 80, potentially. I don't know.
No, I understand what you're saying. So then are you telling me that you want to completely eradicate the game that we got now, or you want a variant of it?
I think there's two. I think there's two things. I think it's a really interesting point. I think it would be. You know, like with cricket, we did the T20 and kind of changed the format. And people said it was
I'm not 100% on cricket. I don't know the.
No. But again, it was just. Yeah, it was just, you know, short over.
T20, the one when they bang the sixes all the time.
Yes. Love you know, it. Quick
baseball
game.
Baseball in pads.
Yes, quick game. Show, you know, things like you got players mic'd up. If you get taken out for a duck, a guy drives in a golf buggy dressed as a giant duck and takes you off. Like,
genuine?
Those kind of, that happened, yeah.
Oh, that's
there's
class.
Like loads, there's loads of fun stuff. But people thought that was going to be the death of Test cricket. Because then you fast forward to a five-day Test at Lords and you've got, you know, three relatives of Paino in the stand with hats, slumped to sleep, watching the game, where it didn't necessarily catch people's imagination. I think rugby could maybe do a renegade 10 series or a 13 man series, you know, shorter games, shorter halves, less people. Or if you want to keep the product we've got, you need to drastically look at potentially things like substitutions, maybe add technical boxes, maybe try to eradicate some of the rules, maybe make it a bit quicker. I think you could still have a happy medium, but instead of weird rules that nobody cares about, like, you know, I can't even think of one that they just do stupid stuff like, you know, that 10 meters away from the kicker or throwing the ball in, or, you know, what kind of oranges they serve at half time. I'd rather have something different.
Satsumas. No, I am with you, Bab, and I do agree that there needs to be something to make the game more inviting so the general consensus of the world. But what I will say to you is, when you start opening up with the game we play, with the amount of contacts and no pads and all that shit, and the amount of dynamics you got, say you were to open the game up and everyone was fucked on the pitch, everyone's blowing, they played 70 minutes, someone will just bring on some absolute juggernaut, right? Because when everyone's blowing, they can't stack him. So that's how the game would work. For example, you get an NFL player, you pay him a load of dough, he's enormous, no one get near him, he comes on 5 minutes at the end, and he wins you a game. Is that what you want to see?
No, but I think only if you can only bring him on if you're injured. So if you, so
but,
that's, example,
but then, like you said this in the past, I'm not saying that you're contradicting yourself, but would that not then bring into play, you're always fucking injured when you're playing?
Yeah, look, look, that's what I mean. The thing is, there is no perfect solution. As you said, I'm playing devil's advocate. Yeah. I just think, I mean, they've got seven people in the stands with iPads checking whether you've got a concussion.
Someone tees you up off nine and they absolutely smoke you, you've got a stinger in your shoulder, you probably got some type of nerve damage, but you get up and you crack on, mate. Like,
yeah, I'm talking about unless your arm's hanging off, it's falling off.
Seven off, fatality from Mortal Kombat, Scorpion comes on, just rips your head off.
Yeah, you can't bring Ellis Genge on. Ellis is like in there, steam's coming out of his ears, he's running up inside
the line, laughing
through his eyeballs, laces, red around his mouth, he's eating the strawberry laces.
Sugar everywhere, that's not sugar, man.
Ready to play, you age, right? And you know, we can't come on. You can't come on until Sinks has been knocked out, and you know, you can't bring Ellis on, or vice versa, or whatever it is.
I know what you're saying. I just think if you're doing that, I do think you're probably looking more towards just playing a completely different game altogether. It's a game built on structure, mate, and like tactics and stuff like that. With the subs and stuff, I am open to the interchanges that the NRL do, like bringing people on and off. Chopping and changing, you know, and like you could bring the same person on off like within 10 minutes, like have an absolute mutant come on for 10 minutes, bring them off, do you know what I mean? And maybe make it more fast paced in that regard, like everyone's always fresh as opposed to people always blowing.
But what's been really interesting being out here in Bermuda is watching the Six Nations, which we are all heavily invested in. You've obviously won it 3 days ago, Hask. You've been there, done it. I've been lucky enough to broadcast it. What was really interesting talking with Americans while watching it is they said this is just not a product that will ever cut the American market. Now, whether the game needs that or not, I've got no idea. I should think, given the current financial crisis that's engulfing the game, it does, and it probably needs it more than ever. Yeah. It looks like the US will get the World Cup in 2031, and then you've got a great pathway to get it through. But I can't see how the current game ever becomes a massive hit in the US. I mean, the Tens thing we've got going on out here at the moment has been really good fun. It's got lots of the interchanges. It's got, you'd love it, Ellis. It's got like conversion jeopardy, where you're able to choose where you take your conversion from and you get more points the harder the kick. But they're talking about making try score a kick the goal. Would you back yourself?
Yeah, but for that, obviously, you wouldn't be able to wear 21s. You'd have to wear better boots as opposed to the fucking steel toe cap caterpillar boots that you run around in.
Maybe you can change before. But they're talking about a draft system. They're talking about, they've taken off the flankers and obviously a winger. And
so how does it work? You've got five people in a scrum.
You've got six in a scrum, front row, second row, number eight.
Are people actually like locking it down, looking for pens?
Oh yeah. It's a real. Have a look for 5 minutes. If 15s is slow and you know defence orientated, and sevens is just popcorn fizz, this has got areas. You've got catch and drives from a 5 meter line out, and you've got your forwards bundling in, but you've also got seven style speed and lots of space. The kicking game's really important. You've got a captain's challenge on there.
I'd give it a whirl, definitely.
You'd love it, Ellis, because you get some ball, you know, so like I saw you on the weekend pick up a ball from a ruck, like hungry for the old Ellis shuffle, boom, head out, trying to move your feet. You'd be able to hit some mega lines and use some footwork in some space, because that space that you sometimes get and you have to work hard for would be there more often, but you'd still get to drop the scrum depth on someone, get your scats checked, and just pile through on the scrum. You still get that. Your dick would get hard, in your words, with a little bit of scrummaging, but you'd also be, you'd be basically running around with a rod on, because you'd be flying into people in the contact area, carrying into space, and also scrum decking people.
How do the subs work?
Roll on, roll off. You can literally bring on a specialist kicker just to do the kicking.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So it's actually similar to the NFL outfit where you bring on a kicker.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that. Sounds marketable as well, doesn't it? But then saying that in the same breath, I would rather like to see, just at the moment, 15 is a lot of people on a pitch, mind. For the same like width and diameter of a football pitch or whatever, it is a lot of people on a pitch, isn't it, when you think about it? Because there's still like minimal space on the football pitch to a degree, and they've only got 11 people on there. They're a lot smaller and quicker than us. I understand what you're saying. But I do also think that people need to adapt and maybe try and open up a new way of attacking that's going to give us loads more time on the ball. Do you know what I mean? Like, just looking at both sides of the argument. But like I said, if they want to completely rip the wheels off the bus and strip it back and come out with a brand new motor, then I'm happy to do that as well.
But Ellis, you know full well, we couldn't organise a global season or understand to play when the Lions is playing versus everything else. The chance of inventing a new game, I think it's just, for me, it's the journalists, like, the games weren't the pinnacle of rugby in comparison to some stuff that's gone on recently or whatever. It wasn't a massive spectacle. Those journalists, they have to sell papers. They're always going to write their negative stuff. But, you know, and then when England play a great game and it's, you know, it's running rugby and it's absolute carve up, they'll be like, oh, the, you know, the game's...
Brilliant.
Yeah. Do you remember after 2015 when everybody says the Southern Hemisphere, sorry, Northern Hemisphere rugby's dead?
Yeah.
They remember they wrote that story where, you know, we're never going to live with anybody. We're never going to compete. We can't compete. And then look where we are now. It's interesting.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to say is it's a long way away, isn't it, from someone standing up and being like, right, yeah, we're completely changing this whole outfit. Like, that's just, it's not going to happen in my career, I'd say.
It'd be really interesting to see whether tweaks get us to the point that we need to get to, or whether there needs to be a sort of massive summit on the game and a, how do we make this into something that's engaged? Do any of your mates watch rugby outside of your involvement in it?
Absolutely not, no. No, right. They don't understand it, find it boring. The only thing they find exciting is like me being involved, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that I do think would be pretty cool, and like league sort of had this nailed down, is like, you know, the World Club Challenge, when like the best team from Northern Hemisphere plays the Southern Hemisphere, from Super League plays the NRL. I think that's a pretty good market they could look down. And then what's the one where Maroons play Blues? State of Origin. Yeah, like do a State of Origin thing, maybe like North v South. Like you see New Zealand done that with the North Island v South Island. I think that's pretty sick. I think they should need to market it better to start with before they think about actually stripping the game to a whole different outfit. I think it just needs to be marketed a lot better. But I think that'd be sick, like doing like a World Club Challenge, like Exeter versus, who won the Super?
Crusaders.
Like Exeter v Crusaders. I'd love to see that.
But we did talk about reducing, you know, reducing games on people. So I when we talked about this, because Alex asked the question when we had Jack Noel on, and I was like all for exactly what you said. I love State of Origin when it's on. I, you know, those North South games would be brilliant, but we'd have to get, you know, have to get rid of the, you know, the Moulton Mowbray Cup or whatever, the, you know, the Argos, the, all these other bits. You have to phase all of them out and have the Heineken Champions Cup, Heineken Challenge Cup, the Premiership. And then those games, you couldn't have any of the other nonsense.
No, what you'd need, I'd say, is probably more squad depth. Like, you should need more players because people just can't roll out. Like, you know, when we're doing those two games a week and stuff. Yeah. Like, I actually found people, because sport was always on, they've been like deprived of sport for so long. People what I didn't know enjoyed rugby were actually starting to enjoy it a bit more because it was always on. So they put it on, seen it on telly. But I'd say you probably need like more money and bigger squads, because I could tell you now, every single squad in the Premiership is probably between 45 and 55 players. You know, like you ain't getting any more than that. And if you got less, you've probably got a few injury crises. But you probably need more players so that you can just put forward more teams in different competitions. Like, you know, if we did do that 13s thing that you're on about, or the 10s, maybe you could do like a whole different competition within the rugby. You know, you did the JP Morgan 7s or whatever it's called now, Premiership 7s. Maybe you could do that, and like you have a, not a specialist team necessarily, but you can put forward some players who could play in that.
Sacked off the second team. That's a great idea. If you imagine sacked off the second team, because obviously the difference between like quality of the second team versus the Premiership, and then Premiership versus international. But if you had a game where you were still getting, because then people say about the sevens, even though I think sevens is one of the best development pathways ever, if it was done properly. Now they've cut that. I imagine if you had a tens, a 13 side that had Premiership side that they played in sort of stuff, got rid of the Premiership seven stuff, but did that, might work.
Do the NRL still do the, is it 11s or 10s?
Was it nines?
Nines, sorry, yeah, the nines. That was sick.
Yeah,
it's essentially sevens in NRL terms, but like that was proper like full goo. Like everyone used to stack their teams up for that as well. It wasn't as if like they just rolled out the bin juice, in James's words. Which, by the way, good post the other day, my boy.
I don't know anything you're talking about. I don't have any control over it.
Has put a post up. Well, someone put a post up.
Hey, I have nothing to do with bin juice. I really like it.
This bin juice account on Instagram put a post up about Joe Joyce. I can't remember what it said, but he sent it to me saying, "Your mate Ask wants to get filled in, doesn't he?" I sent it to Ask.
But have you seen, in the TV series Hot Fuzz, where they go around to that old farmer's house and they have to take the old policeman to understand. So basically, Joe, there's no point Joe Joyce speaking to me because I wouldn't understand it. And then I barely understand Ellis. So Joycey has to bollock Ellis. Ellis then bollocks me. And like a translation of
Dana Guerrero. Like, yeah. Sink said to me the other day, for his 50th game for club, they added like his dad and all his mates up on the screen. Sink said he sat there and everyone was laughing. He could not, he said genuinely, bro, I could not understand a fucking word he said. Like, not, like literally, I know when people say that, like they sometimes they're just joking, but he said, I could not understand a word he said. Like his accent is that strong. Martin Joyce, God bless his soul.
Fingers crossed, we find a way to get the game and the product. I mean, correct. There's so many challenges across the world at the moment. It's not priority, is it? No, no. But I think, you know, particularly with all the, you know, the grassroots club rugby having been postponed for another season. I mean, fingers crossed it doesn't damage the game beyond repair. But
what, because of the lockdown, it's been suspended for another season?
Yeah, so they've suspended the rugby season, I think, from level three down.
That's a bit mad, isn't it?
Alex, there is one positive, though. That at least we got back playing rugby, and it might not be the product we wanted, but it brought a lot of happiness. Yeah. We finished the Premiership, we finished the Six Nations, we did a tournament. Yeah. People loved it. There is, world's falling apart. You've got American elections on Tuesday. You know, there's going to be a civil war over there, hands down. Trump's not leaving. Trump's not going to be like the guy from Wolf of Wall Street. They'll be like, Donald, you have to leave the White House. So I'm not fucking leaving. And then, you know, you've got the fact we're going to have a new season start. Rugby and sport are going to carry on when the rest of the world's falling apart. So I think there is a lot of positivity. Yes. And actually,
yeah,
you know, it might not be what we all want, but fuck me. England won the grand. England won the tournament. France played well. Italy played well. Wales and Scotland, boring. Scotland got a win that helps them out. You know, Alwyn Jones, the most capped player in the world. New Zealand won the Bledisloe Cup.
It's like Eddie said, you know, when he said about the game being a laughing stock and stuff, like he ain't far wrong, because if you think with the Barbar stuff, although everyone's got different opinions on it, like it did sort of make rugby look like that old fucking pub boys sport, didn't it? Where like they just take the piss and they go out and they get on the lash and that one. Actually, we've been working so hard for like the last sort of six, five years to make it this elite and like operate at these levels. And it's sort of done a big U-turn, didn't it, in one night. But like you said, there is so much good shit going on in the game, and it's actually putting smiles on faces for people at home who are in such a bad position. So I guess it ain't all fucking bad, is it?
Good on you, both of you. I think that's a very nice positive note as we head towards the end. A couple of things. How much are we looking forward to the Autumn Nations Cup, live on Amazon Prime? New territories as a broadcaster. Are you looking forward to another run around?
Yeah, that'd be mad, wouldn't it, being on Amazon? How does that work then, with Amazon?
I think if you buy yourself some toothpaste and some groceries, you get free access to the rugby.
Shut up. So you order off Amazon and then you get to watch the sports.
Something like that. No, I think if you're an Amazon Prime member, I think you get your rugby with it, yeah.
What about Deliveroo Prime?
Deliveroo Prime?
Massively into the sport.
Yeah. You said that you let your rig go with your eating. Surely you know what Deliveroo Prime is, boy.
Hold on. When I say let my rig go, I don't look like a melted candle. I'm just meaning I've gone from an 8-pack to a 6-pack and slightly less vascular. I'm talking about like I had a pizza the other day and a couple of beers. Like, yeah. I'm reached Ellis Genge levels of disregard for the setup.
Fuck's sake, Chicago.
Not like David Wilson. You know, David Wilson used to play in the England team, and every night in the Penny Hill car park, because Moose had such a he had one bent arm because he broke it and then never fixed it when he was younger, just pulled the calf and went off playing. So his arm was bent by two M&S shopping bags full of contraband. You just see, as you drove in, you just catch the headlights of the Moose just walking back to the room. I haven't reached those levels of rig, you know.
That's sad to hear, boy. But yeah, Amazon, it's like, that's a good way to market something. Amazon, one of the biggest fucking streaming things in the world at the moment. Like, that's so good from... But do you reckon rugby organised that, or do you reckon they sort of wanted it?
No, I think Amazon are interested in it. You know, they're doing... Yeah. They've got some of the Premier League. They've got... women's tennis.
That's probably where it's going, isn't it? Because you think not everyone, but majority of people who got television and now got Netflix pay the £6 a month, whatever it is, for Netflix and like Amazon Prime and stuff. And you think like all these channels and subscriptions and like network providers like Sky or BT and all that, like charge so much dough for their services for each month for like to have a landline and that or whatever. But then if you think Amazon, if they just did that and you sort your phone out on your own, then you don't actually need Sky and all that, do you?
I think it's a massive, massive deal. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about Amazon and their involvement next week on the show. But mate, I think it's huge. You know, going on streaming.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the more people are watching stream stuff than anything else. I don't believe when they say like TV and, you know, newspapers are dead, but a lot of people are glued to streaming platforms, and something like Amazon with their pedigree, their budget, and their desire to bring it to a wider audience. And I think as well, when you have a streaming platform, the freedom to do different things. is you know, when you're playing in that size, when you're doing normal television, I mean, Alex know better, you have certain constraints, you have timing issues, you have other programs to follow.
What's this with when you've got like a schedule for TV?
Yeah,
so when Alex is working at Sky, you know, he's got an earpiece in there that's going, you've got 2 minutes to go, we've got commercial break, you've only got this limited time, we've got to go over to the football, you know, and you only get a certain amount of viewership.
Your slot's your slot.
But with Amazon, you have the development, and then off the back of it, you know, for example, like a Good, the Bad, the Rugby, you could go into more depth, you could show more characters, whereas... You know, that's why podcasting is so desirable at the moment, because people are sick of tuning in when you've got 1 minute. Ellis, Gens, what do you think of the game? It was really, really good. We worked really hard. And Eddie Jones really pleased. Like, thank you, Ellis. Back to the show. Whereas this, we've got to chat for fucking, you know, an hour about Ginster Slice, strawberry laces, my soggy rig, and you know, and your colourful headphones.
Soggy biscuit. Now, there's a lot more freedom, isn't there, with like streaming platforms and all that sort of stuff. It's actually, and it's quite modern as well. Like, everyone in this generation, obviously some people can't, but then like everyone sort of got access to it. If they like started putting on Nothing to Declare and Camp Pay Will Take It Away, I'd be all ears, man. I'd be in.
Nothing to declare. What cash in the attic and location. What, you all over it.
Do you not watch that? Like Border Patrol and stuff like that?
No.
Genuine?
Wrong demographic.
Sorry, bud. It's not my neck of the woods, that.
I love it.
Oh, you know, I bet you love, like, police interceptors.
Road wars, all that stuff.
Road wars.
Oh, cops on camera.
My favourite is, he goes, this stupid villain didn't know round the corner was Officer Johnson. And you see a shit guy go, yeah, I got the guy. You got the perp coming out the house.
I love them shows.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Have you seen that brother on there? He gets pulled over and he's like, "Don't touch my cock. Don't touch my cock." And the copper touches him. He's like, "I've got a 9-incher." Have you seen that bloke or not?
No.
Class.
Wasn't Courtney, was it?
Potentially 10-incher.
Oh yeah. So I was doing him out with a couple of those.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
I love this. I mean, a definite freshness and a new direction with our fourth wheel on the tripod. Welcome to Amazon. So, yeah, what are we going, England, in it to win it, this Autumn Nations Cup? Is it going to be a chance to try things? Have you got any sort of intel as to what Eddie's going to do? Or we just go again?
No, just go again, man. Like, I think the big thing for him, like he said, and the world's on its ass to a degree, isn't it, with everything that's going on. Like, there's so much mad shit going on with the pandemic. Like, we're lucky enough to be able to still play rugby. So he just said, enjoy it. Like, whatever challenge we've got faced with us, whether or not we can't fucking be in camp, or like, we just got to go in raw. Like, just enjoy it as much as you can. Enjoy it with the boys and make the most of it, because you never know when it's going to get taken away. And that hit home for me. Like, Johnny Hill, I hadn't seen him in a long time because of the lockdown and that. Good friend of mine, when he came into camp, he was like, mate, it's fucking mint. Like, we still get to play rugby. I know we're bubbled off and we can't see our family and that, and like, I didn't see my son for 2 weeks or whatever, and he's been growing so much and all that. But I did think, yeah, fair play, we do actually get to come out here and play rugby. So it's pretty class. So whatever we have got in store for the Eight Nations, is that what it's called?
Autumn Nations Cup. Yeah.
And
Nations.
How does that work? So there's four teams in each pool. They play off, and then the winner, is there a semis, or is it just straight?
And I think you go into a knockout, don't you? Semis and final?
Yeah, I don't know.
I made that up. Perhaps I'll add that if they do.
That'd be pretty sick as well.
The other thing I wanted to just quickly ask you before we go, how weird is it playing at the Stadio Olimpico in front of nobody?
Do you know what? That would have been my first time playing being to Rome in general, but my first time playing at that stadium. It's such a sick stadium.
But just playing in front of no fans at all, is that?
Yeah, it was mad. But then we'd done that we'd done a training session at Twickenham where like there was no one in the crowd, obviously, and like you could hear everything everyone was saying. The only weird bit for me being on the bench is like when the boys scored or whatever, and you get up, you're like, yeah, like going crazy and throwing Red Bull everywhere. You look around and it's like, oh my god, everyone's watching you. Like, you look a right prick, and you can hear everything everyone's saying. Literally, like if the boss loses his mind, like you can hear what he's saying and stuff. So it was quite interesting to hear everything that actually goes on. Other than that, the stadium's sick. Like, I was sat in I sat opposite Chris. Is it Chris Smalling who's at Roma?
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, all the footballers still had all their signs up, like Javier Pastore, boys like that, and Billy V's a big Roma fan, so he was, like, proper gassed when he was in there seeing all the names on the wall and that.
What's his connection to Roma?
I don't know, it's just his team on FIFA.
He likes pizza.
Yeah, there you are.
kicked because of the pepperoni. Good. Probably rounding it up. Just a couple of bits to finish on. There was some very sad news this last week about the great JJ Williams. 30 caps and 12 tries for Wales, 7 tests for the Lions. Victorious in that remarkable tour of 1974 and a tourist in 1977 as well. I was actually very lucky to work with him only once, and just the most consummate gentleman, an absolute superstar of the game, and very sadly missed, but hopefully there's sort of consolation for his friends and family and a life very well lived. We touched very briefly on the All Blacks as well, beating Australia 43-5, a record win to retain the Bledisloe Cup. Highest ever margin of victory for the All Blacks over the Wallabies. You had a nice message from David Pocock.
Do you know what? I was like, you know when you get a little bit of just fanboy a little bit, and it just these moments where you like, I think most people would take it for granted, and they probably, I know I'm a bit of a dichotomy in terms of, I am actually a bit of a nerd and I really love what I do. And sometimes I play the joker, but obviously I took my career really seriously. And to get, you know, to get a message from him, you know, when he's such a quality player, and I got it on, I took a screenshot of it to keep it genuine, because I was like amazed. Obviously David Pocock retired. And I talked to Dylan Hartley about this actually. When a lot of players retire, there is obviously sometimes a lot of noise, but sometimes guys don't reach out. And I always try to, when, you know, spoke to Ben Youngs, messaged Sladey today and Johnny May, and, you know, and obviously we knew Ellis was coming on, to congratulate him on these little moments, you know, Owen as well. And David Poco, I just tweeted, said, look, one of the best to ever do it. A huge inspiration for me. Someone I tried to learn from. Sadly, I didn't even get 10% as good as he is. Congrats to David Poco on an unreal career. Enjoy your retirement, right? I didn't think he'd reply. I didn't see anything. And he wrote 10% smiley face. Right, oh, mate. Loved our tussles over the years. Thank you. Congrats to the book. Look forward to catching up. And he posted a picture of me hitting him in that game. And I was like,
oh, yeah, you melted, amazing. Didn't you?
Yeah, but someone for me who like admires him and what he does and what he stands for and the kind of bloke he was, it was really touching. I was kind of a bit like, it's a moment you go, I like that.
Did he retire to do his conservation stuff?
I think he might have done, yeah, and a lot amongst other things. I just think he thought that, you know, the time was right. But just these little moments, I think that's the beauty of sport, that, you know, you sort of share these battlefield moments, but ultimately we're all going to go through the same thing with retirement, you know, childbirth, death, happiness thing. We're all in it together, and I think it's just quite nice to get those moments. I was very surprised and very touched, and yeah, I'm going to keep it. I'm not sure I can frame it, but I'll do something with it.
Yeah, he seems like a legend.
Yeah. Nice to have a chat with them at some point, actually. Yeah. Well done, chaps. Very good fun. Ellis, an official welcome. Are you going to sign the contract? Are we in it to win it? Or are you
sign the contract, big boy. Yeah, I reckon, genuine though, like you said about that streaming stuff, Hask obviously hung his gloves up before he had his first fight. I reckon that's what we do to entice people, get into the show. Me and him have a hell in a cell, fight to the death. You get your teeth out, gum shield dump fit. We have it right out. Queensbury rules. Betting a lot, like we're getting William
Hill. Let's see if I can punch that dart back into place and see if I can make it stick back out of
it. Nah, yeah, I'm buzzing, man. You got a good show. Obviously, I worked with you a lot last year, and hopefully, we can change the demographic of how people view this this weird, weird sport we all love.
And also, do you know what? We're potentially maybe even putting a franchise team into something, and we might need a dynamic prop. Or they could be a mini series. Ellis's view, Genji's chat, whatever it is. So listen, mate, you know, it's very exciting, and hopefully there's many more opportunities, because I absolutely love you. Alex never stops talking you up, and our fans love you and love you and your sausage setup.
I'm buzzing for the staff party.
Oh, mate. Oh, my God. At Tyndall's party barn. Mate,
how good is the party barn? I've only ever heard about it. How impressive is it?
Obviously, it's a corporate space. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. We are filming the Christmas special there, a socially distanced, obviously. And without a shadow of a doubt, I think if Ellis comes fully on board, we will do the his first show there together. We'll get it down. Because, mate, it's better than my house.
Is it?
I mean, you know, it's better than my house.
I bet your gaff's all right. Like.
Well, you know, think of Buckingham Palace, but slightly smaller. That's my gaff. And his is bigger than Buckingham Palace. But the party barn was unbelievable, mate. You will love it. Oh, there's a bar, a proper bar. I mean, apart from like beer on draft, they've got fridges underneath, got everything you need in there.
We'll do a socially distance north, east, south, and west wing. We don't need to meet. We can all just sort of holler at each other down the corridors.
Exactly. I've got good Wi-Fi.
Yes. And let's go. Well, enjoy the next couple of weeks. Love to the Bab, and speak to you again very soon, I hope. Send you the contract when you're done.
Pleasure.
50 quid for this week. That is it for the good, the bad, and the rugby. Well done, half. Well done to Dr. Genge. Don't forget to join in the conversation across our socials at Good Bad Rugby. Tins is back next week alongside one of the greats of English rugby, an old teammate of his. We are very excited about that. The clues will be coming across the social channels before too long. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for your nice comments. Until next time, take it away, Rob Brydon. Have a good week. Be seeing ya.
Rob Brydon, that fucking bloke from Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does our That's... Welcome to the Good, the Bad and the Rugby.
That's fucking mint.
Thank you so much for listening to the Good, the Bad and the Rugby. It can't have been easy.